Welcome to Straight and Curly,
a podcast for self-improvement junkies.
I'm Kelly Exeter.
And I'm Carly Jacobs.
This is episode 85.
Hello and welcome to Straight and Curly. We're going to kick off this episode with one of the beautiful reviews we've received. But before we do that, I just want to say a massive thank you to everyone who's left a review. As you know, the crossover to becoming an independent show totally screwed us over and we lost all 87 of our beautiful reviews. And I just checked a few minutes ago and we currently have 91 reviews. So thank you so much for that. We know how painful it is to leave reviews on iTunes. They really don't make it easy. So we really appreciate you taking the time to do that, especially because I know from just talking to the group and to our listeners that a lot of you listen when you're in the car or when you're at the gym or when you know you've got your hands in soapy water at the sink. So remembering to go back to your phone when you're actually able to leave a review is just the most beautiful thing you can do for us. So thank you. I don't know how to say this person's name.
Simo Rules.
Yeah. Oh, Simo Rules. I'm putting the R in there. No, so it's Simo Rules. And this person says, I've been listening to Kelly and Carly for a while now. They get me. It feels like they're talking to me and there's always one or two things I take away from their chat.
Yeah, that is so awesome. Thank you so much, Simo Rules, for that lovely review and for taking the time out to leave it on iTunes. As Carly mentioned, it is quite painful. So we appreciate so much you listening to the show and we appreciate everyone who listens, actually. So guys, don't forget, we are aiming to hit 100 reviews before the end of the year. We only need 9 more. So if you listen to and love Straight and Curly, please do leave us, you know, a 5-star review. If you love it, it's worth 5 stars, right? Help us reach our goal. So that would be amazing. But on with the show, Carls.
Just on that note with reviews, just I'm having a side thought already. You know how sometimes you look up reviews like this hasn't happened in the new lot of reviews on our podcast, but I've looked at reviews on other podcasts where people will leave a 3-star review and go, great, I love it. It's amazing. Why 3 stars? And then you leave just perfect feedback. I don't understand. Oh,
do you know what? And this is, of course, another little side trip. I saw a guy do that to Pat Flynn once. Pat Flynn, who he's a podcaster and an author and, you know, one of the biggest bloggers in the world.
Yeah.
For our listeners' sake.
Smart
passive income, I think is the one. Anyway, so someone left him a 3-star review once on Amazon for his book, but left like this glowing review. And everyone was like, dude, you did that just to get attention, didn't you? So it's a bit of a weird one. Like, yeah, if you're going to leave a 3-star review and then tell people they're awesome.
Yeah, I find that very odd, but anyway, each to their own. So today we're going to be talking about Gretchen Rubin's 4 Tendencies book, and this is our first ever book club episode. I'm actually really excited about this. If you don't already know about this, we've actually started a book club, and when I say we, I actually mean the fantastic Lauren Osborne, who is running the group for us. She's amazing. She popped into the group one day and was keen to there's 2 groups now. So we've got the Straight and Curly Book Club group and the Straight and Curly Facebook group. And Lauren popped up one day in the regular group and was keen to start a self-improvement book club. And I was just like, this is amazing. And I suggested we start it like within Straight and Curly. Neck minute, Lauren's out there. She's gone, set it up. Something tells me she's been upholding it just quietly. So if you would like to join the book club, you can find it at facebook.com/groups/ Straight and Curly Book Club. We'll also put a reminder in the group on the day that it comes out. But we've been in the group chatting to people about the book. So we've got some questions that people have asked. There's been some discussion topics happening. It's been really cool, actually. I'm really stoked. And thank you so much, Lauren, for running it. You're an absolute gem.
Yeah, no, I'm so stoked for Lauren, who she's really driven the group. She hunted down discussion questions about this book and she's been putting them out into the group. So we read it in October and now we're discussing it in November. And then currently in November, if you're listening to this, the book for November is Thrive by Arianna Huffington. So I need to get busy reading that one.
I suspect I've already read that, but I might need to read it
again. I need to reread it. But yeah, no, it's been fantastic. And the discussion in the group has been just awesome to read and very, very interesting. So, yeah, as Carly said, our first book for the book club was Gretchen Rubin's Four Tendencies book. And I think this is a good time for us both to share what we thought about the book, each of us, before we'll then go through the discussion points from the book and share our thoughts. So I found this such a different book for Gretchen. I've read everything that she's written in the self-improvement space. And I do wonder if it was a bit hard for her to write, because normally an absolute ton of research goes into her books. But in this situation, the Four Tendencies framework is a framework that she created for herself. We have mentioned the framework a lot of times on the show, but essentially what it is, the framework is, it deals with one very narrow aspect of human behavior, and it answers the question, how do you deal with expectations? And she came up with, there's four ways that people deal with expectations. Upholders, they respond well to both external and internal expectations. So if they expect something from themselves, or if other people expect something from them, they have no trouble making that thing happen. Then you've got questioners who literally question everything. So if someone externally expects something of them, or if they internally expect something of themselves, they've got to have a strong why about it. So if you can get them to buy into it, the questioner will do it. If the questioner doesn't think, if it's an arbitrary kind of thing, or the questioner doesn't think there's a good reason to do the thing you're asking them, they just won't do it. Obligers respond really well to external expectations. So if someone asks them to do something, they'll do it quite willingly. But if they expect themselves to do something like, you know, train for a marathon or give up sugar, they find it very hard to make those things happen. And then there are rebels who don't respond well to any expectations, not their own and not other people's. So Gretchen identified these four groups of people in her first, in her most recent book before this one called, was it Better Than Before, which was her book about habits. And then like the reaction to this four tendency framework that she kind of created in the Better Than Before book was so massive that it led her to write this Four Tendencies book. So with her other self-improvement books, tons and tons of research have gone into those things, but this Four Tendency framework, she created herself, and there's not a lot of research sitting behind it. So all she could really do with the book was outline the four tendencies and then kind of go through different ways of, first of all, if you're a certain tendency, how to get yourself to do things. And then how to deal with people who are other tendencies, because, you know, for example, upholders, which Carly and I both are, we just kind of find it hard to understand why other people just can't do things, because we're like, if yeah. you need to do it, you just do it, right? Which is probably not the best thing for this podcast, because we're both like, we
actually, having said that though, like after reading this book, because you casually identified me as an upholder, like I obviously am an upholder, but you put questioner as my secondary, and I was like, oh yeah, I don't know, but I am. I'm an upholder questioner, and you're an upholder obliger, so yes. I think that's where,
so it's tipping, like, so it's primarily upholder, but you tip towards being a questioner, and I'm an upholder yeah. who tips towards being an obliger, because they're the ones that sit each
and I think side. That actually makes us quite different.
Well, I agree, because you do have a bit of a like, hang on, why are we doing this thing again, whereas I'm like, yeah, well, we just, because people asked us to, you know,
because it's the rules, that's why.
Yeah. So Carls, what did you think of the book? Because like, you're not actually like, I devour self-improvement books by, you know, the ton. You're not really into them all that much, are you?
Yeah, randomly I'm not. I'm super into self-improvement and I really love research and things, but I find a lot of self-improvement books are quite not this one. I actually really quite enjoyed this one. I like practical advice and actionable things. And I find a lot of self-improvement books are like, oh, here's a philosophy, here's some things about it, maybe think about it, and then I'll read it and leave. I leave feeling quite unsatisfied.
Because you're like, what do you want me to do? Give me something to
do. What do you want me to do with this? Yeah, exactly. And also that's the question that comes out of me, because I go, well, what was the point in reading that? That I, you know, I was already thinking about this. That's why I read the book. I was looking for some answers or some actions.
Or something to expand your thinking on that topic.
Yeah, exactly. Or to learn something I haven't already learnt before, because I do I'm in the self-improvement space, and I read a lot of self-improvement blogs, and I watch a lot of you know, self-improvement YouTube people, and you know, organization and productivity and that kind of stuff. So I'm always constantly looking for something quite new. So unless it's a brand new concept I haven't come across, the time spent on reading self-improvement books thus far has not necessarily been good time spent for me. But also I struggle a lot with them because my partner is a questioner upholder, so he's the opposite of me. And every time I read a self-improvement book, I always end up looking for, you know, statistical proof of what the author was saying, and more often than not it's non-existent, like with this book. But I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing though, because I really quite enjoyed this, and I think she's a really great writer. I found her writing very this is actually the first Gretchen Rubin book I've read, so I found she was very digestible. I didn't struggle reading it, and it was really interesting, and I will definitely be reading more stuff from her. So
yeah, you would enjoy Better Than Before, I reckon, because yeah, I went into that book thinking, come on, like, I've read everything there is to read on habits. You know, I love Gretchen, but I can't imagine what she could possibly bring to this conversation that I have not read already. But she actually did bring a lot of, you know, just a different way of thinking, not just the framework that she created, but the strategies that she introduced. I was like, oh,
I think that's why it appealed to me, because there's strategies and implementation. It's not, she doesn't say, hey, you know, question everything. Isn't that a bit shit? She goes, question everything, and here's how you can work with that, or here's how, you know, you can reframe it. And also I love the fact that she not only gives you tips to deal with other tendencies, but also gives the tendencies the power to reframe their own thinking in order to not be a giant pain in the ass for the other tendencies.
Yeah, that's it. So the book club questions, which happily Gretchen provided herself on her website. Thank you, Gretchen. I think we're going to work through those now. And the first one that she asks is, do you believe that putting, and I'm laughing because I know how Carly feels about this, and this is such a questioner thing. Do you believe that putting people into distinct categories is possible, or do you believe that people are too complex to be put in simple boxes? Does thinking I'm an obliger or you're a rebel limit people's sense of possibility and potential for growth? Carly.
Yes, definitely. And that's my main issue with any kind of personality test. To be honest, I'm not super into them. I find them interesting, and I like reading them and knowing which one I am, except I always forget which Myers-Briggs I am because I don't really care. I'll always be like, what is it, Kelly? What am I again?
You are an ESTJ.
You like hesitated on J there. I'm like, no, yeah, say J.
Because I was like, we're different in everyone, but oh yeah, that's right, the J.
The J. And I mean, although Gretchen would probably say that because I question the validity of personality tests, she would say that's because I'm part questioner. Yes. I'm also with the biggest questioner in the world, and that kind of rubs off on me. But I also I'm not the type of person to do a lot of research within my own bubble. I go outside of my bubble to make sure I'm reading things from, you know, all different sources. And there was this amazing episode of Adam Ruins Everything. If you have not watched this show, you need to watch it.
I refuse to watch the one on Adam Ruins Everything about Myers-Briggs, because I love Myers-Briggs, but continue.
Oh my God, I'm just about to tell you what's in it.
I know.
It's such a great show. If you do see it, I think it's on like ABC or SBS, but it's fantastic. It's basically a guy who takes a concept and then ruins it. So he'll like ruin
something that everyone like really believes in, like wholeheartedly. Yeah. Like, I don't know, paleo, like, or, you know.
Yeah, or the internet. Or another one that was really good was the episode on airport security. He basically showed how none of what they do is effective at all. And I was like, oh,
that's
great.
Really comforting,
isn't it? Feeling super safe about flying. Thanks. So he did one on the Myers-Briggs testing, and he basically debunked the whole thing, and it's pretty much a giant crock of shit. And he said, so like for a start, it was developed in 1943, and we pretty much don't use any medical or psychological information from that era anymore. So it's a very old test that sort of makes it redundant already. This is a random fact. So I'm totally digressing again. But did you know that they still use leeches medicinally?
No, I did not know that.
They actually do that. So I've got a mate of mine who's a doctor, and I really love gross stuff a lot. So I'm one of those people who watches like Dr. Pimple Pop on Instagram.
No.
I know, I'm disgusting. I'm foul. But I love it. And my dad really likes gross stuff as well. So we kind of send each other little videos of gross things. And so my mate knew this and came home from work one day and she was like, check out this. We're using leeches to clean this guy's wound. And it's just they just have medicinal leeches in hospitals currently. So there is an example of a very ancient medicinal thing that we are still using. But generally you tend to not use stuff that
from 1943.
Not from 1943. Anyway, so it was created by Catherine Cook Briggs and her daughter Isabel Briggs Myers, and the whole thing was pretty much made up. So there was another episode that I listened to that on a podcast called Skeptoid that was really good, and there was a quote from it that I just thought was excellent. One obvious trait that Myers-Briggs has in common with horoscopes is its tendency to describe each personality type using only positive words. Horoscopes are so popular in part because they virtually always tell people just what they want to hear using phrases that most people generally like to believe are true, like you have lots of unused potential. So I see a lot of that stuff in, the Myers-Briggs personality descriptors.
I disagree.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I disagree that it only says the stuff that you're good at because, I mean, so I'm obsessed with Myers-Briggs. I've done.
It serves you a shit sandwich though. Like it starts with the good stuff, gives you some of the shit stuff, and then gives you the good stuff again at the end.
Yeah, I find it interesting that the Adam Ruins Everything has said it has no basis whatsoever because I have found it so useful in understanding myself, both negatives and positives, but also understanding others. But then I'm a personality type that loves personality tests.
Yeah, they also – there was a whole bunch of stuff. Like, I'm not saying it's completely baseless. Like, it's obviously not, but there was
– the whole industry is based around it, so – well, yeah, I don't know. I guess there's whole industry is based around a lot of things that are a bunch of crap.
Well, there was a whole bit in it where they just, like, randomly added – I think they started out – is there 16
yes.
of them? 16 personality types? They started out with – 8 and then just like randomly doubled it and then just – and there was all of this research that just showed that there wasn't really much behind it and they just kind of arbitrarily changed bits and pieces without ever doing an enormous amount of research. And this would have been before that they were even very good at doing, you know, proper focused research with, you know, really good test data and good test subjects and that kind of stuff. So, I mean, this is just another thing I'm throwing out there. It's not necessarily true, but it's
but this is, there's been a lot this of – this is like your personality is to question it and demand the data. And it's interesting because I listened to Gretchen being interviewed by Scott Barry Kaufman on the Psychology Podcast, which is another one of my favorite podcasts. And he was very much like you and he too is a questioner where he was like, what's your proof? Where did this come from? Blah, blah. And she was kind of like, well – I don't have proof. I've just got a theory. It's a working theory. It's something that's helpful to people because when they go, oh, I'm an obliger, I'm not just a completely hopeless human being, like the reason I can do things for other people but not myself is this, then it kind of gives them power to then – because I just think that that whole mindset of like I'm just hopeless and completely a total loser – is so, and it's how I used to feel about being an introvert. So I felt that equated to being like, yeah, completely socially inept and just a loser. And once I, you know, did Myers-Briggs and it said, you're just an introvert. It's just a way of being. It's neither a positive nor a negative, but it's just something that you manage to have a functional life. It completely changed my life. And I guess that's what I, you know, because one of the discussion questions was, does it limit or do these categories limit people's sense of possibility and potential for growth? And I feel like, okay, yes, we can't all be put into boxes and lots of people resist labels, but I do find that, yeah, finding out that you're hardwired a certain way rather than just dysfunctional or you've just evolved to be like that because of how you were brought up or things in your life, when you find it's kind of more how you're hardwired, you go, oh, okay, that's just how I am. Now I can do something to deal with this thing better. So
I completely agree. And having said everything that I did say about it being a giant crock of shit, I also firmly believe in placebo. And I think it's that if it works, even if what it's based on is not a correct scientifically proven thing, who cares?
And that, yeah, Seth Godin says that as well. Like, what people have this big thing about placebos, but as you say, if they work, then
do it.
So yeah, that yes, I agree.
So I like Gretchen Rubin's theory is also made up, but it actually, I really like it for some reason, and it does make a lot of sense to me. And this is one of the first things I've read that I've gone, oh yeah, like I can see how this is
applicable, you know,
useful.
Because I guess that's the thing, is like, can you apply it to your life, and does it help you help yourself and also help other people, and does it help you understand people better? And I think that's the key. And actually, that's one of the questions is, has understanding the four tendencies help you to understand someone in your life? And if so, did knowing their tendency help you deal with that person more effectively? I mean, I can say the aunt is, who's my partner, is a questioner, and he has always, like, he's a full-blown questioner who tips to rebel. It's really quite frustrating, especially when I'm an upholder. Like, so I'm just like, just do the thing. Like, why do we need,
like, to argue about this every time?
Why do we need reams of proof and, you know, encyclopedias worth of data and research before you will just do this thing that makes sense to me, or at least just try it? But no, he needs the proof. And he also, questioners can feel quite aggressive because they just don't do anything without asking why, and it feels so for obligers or for upholders, we're just like, why do you need to know why? Why can't you just do it? And so certainly understanding the aunt is a questioner and not just an idiot or a dick has helped me deal with that aspect of him a lot better. And it's also helped me a lot with my daughter, who is a rebel and has been very challenging to me, but because I know she's a rebel, I know that now that the way to get her to do something or motivate her to do something, I need to kind of appeal to her at an identity level rather than, like, she just won't do something if I flat out ask her. It's kind of like I can see that if I ask her to do something, she just physically can't do it simply because I asked. And so we end up having this like massive standoff, like me standing there going, I just asked you to do the thing. Just do the thing. And she's like, but I can't because you asked me.
And now my hands are tired. It's unfortunate for both of us.
It's infuriating. But now I know, like, you, rather than say, Mia, can you go, Mia, go wash your hands, I'll say, you know, Mia, you need to go wash your hands. You can either do it now or you can do it after this. But if you do it after this, you won't be able to do that. So you kind of have to give a choice. So you have to give them agency over the thing. And if they feel like they have some say in what's happening, then they'll end up doing the thing.
That sounds so exhausting.
It's honestly, like, it does my head in, but it beats standing there having a standoff with her every single time I ask her to do something. So, yes. So has understanding the four tendencies helped you understand someone in your life better?
It has, yeah. So since discovering that Ben's a questioner, that's made a lot of sense because I will, you know, we both own businesses and we both work from home. So we are very intertwined with each other's jobs and we kind of do each other's jobs really. Like technically we don't technically work together, but he's very involved in my business and I'm very involved in his. And, sometimes I'll say something like, oh, you know, I want to try this new, system on Crochet Coach, where, you know, this little box will pop up and ask people questions and then he'll go, oh, why would you want to do that? And then I'll say, well, for this reason, this reason, and this reason. And then he'll say, well, have you looked into making sure that this is the best one to do? And I'll be like, obviously I have. I'm an upholder. Like, I know how to do my research. So we
But I haven't researched it to, like, you know, I haven't checked out every single possible system on the market and made a pros and cons list.
Exactly.
And, like, I've just gone, I've done my research. I've identified that this is one of many good options.
Exactly.
And that's the difference, I think, between us and questioners is that we will look into it and we'll do the research. But questioners are like, have you considered every single option? Because you can't make an informed decision without having done that. And it's like, well, actually, yeah, you can. Or, you know, if you...
It's also sometimes hard to get him because he does a lot of the back-end stuff on my blog, all the tech stuff, because I'm so good at the tech stuff on my blog. But it takes him a really long time to do stuff because I'll say, hey, can you add a pin-it button to Crochet Coach for me? And it... And he'll go, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then I'll say, can you do it? And he'll go, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then it will end up not getting done. And then I'm like, well, I'll just do it because it's just, it's so much quicker for him to do that kind of stuff than me because I'm just lost. I'm like, I can do it, but it'll take me 5 hours. And then it won't end up getting done. And then I'll get really frustrated. And he didn't do it because he forgot. He didn't do it because he's busy making sure he's installing the correct one that's going to look the best, that's going to perform the best, and actually getting him over the line with implementing things can be a real struggle. And I'm an upholder, so I want things done yesterday.
Yeah. And you want to be able to do it yourself. You're like, this needs to be done and I'm just going to do it. And having to wait for someone else to make something happen for you is...
Yeah, is really frustrating.
And actually, so that kind of leads quite tidily to the next question, which is, can you identify patterns that sometimes drive you crazy about another tendency? Upholders being rigid, questioners who won't stop questioning, obligers who don't explain that they're overworked, and rebels resisting reasonable requests. Does it help to realize that these are common patterns that aren't aimed at you personally? And I guess like I've covered that from me in that it certainly helped to find out that Ant's persistent questioning of everything to the nth degree, that was helpful to me to find out it wasn't just me. It's not me that he's questioning. It's the idea. So I was taking it personally and going, why can't you just take my word for this? Why can't you, you know, why do I have
to explain it?
Why do I have to give you proof from a Harvard professor before you make this simple little change, you know? But yeah, so once I found that it wasn't me personally, that helped a lot. And now I can kind of stand back a bit and go, okay, this is just part of the process that we have to work through if I want you to do this thing. So yes,
with the ones that they mentioned, like in this particular question, so questioners who won't stop questioning, I'm actually okay with that because I'm part questioner as well, and so and I always have a good answer for stuff, so that doesn't really bother me. Obligers who don't explain that they're being overworked, I actually don't care that they're overworked. That's a horrible thing to say, but unless you're going to tell me that you've got a problem, I'm not going to see it, and if you can't tell me, then I can't, like, rationally, I can't do much about that. So that particular thing doesn't really frustrate me.
And until obligers lose their shit and have an obliger rebellion, where they just hate the world and they won't do anything, and it's like that to me, I kind of go, "Come on, guys! Like, why did you keep saying yes if you knew what the end result
that was going to happen?"
I can't really talk. Because
you've had obliger burnout before.
I used to do that all the time. So, and it's funny because I remember I was actually emailing with Gretchen once about something, and I just said something about myself. She's like,
"Oh, sorry, did you just tell me?" Yeah, I was just emailing Gretchen.
This is like
just
years casual ago, little, you know. But yeah, I can't even remember what I was emailing her about. But I said something.
My BFF Gretchen.
I said something about being an upholder, and she said, "Oh no, you actually sound like an obliger to me." And I'm like, "I'm totally not an obliger, but I can see how my words make it sound like I am." But yeah, I think the thing is with upholders, we are at danger of burnout because we will readily meet other people's expectations, but we prioritize our expectations over theirs.
Yeah.
So I think we're more at in the book, Gretchen suggests that upholders are a bit too sensible for burnout because they will prioritize their expectations and they will deprioritize other people's expectations. I don't know about other upholders listening to this, but I tend to just equally prioritize both. So I will meet every expectation of me, but I will also meet every expectation I have of myself, and the expectations I have of myself are possibly a little bit extreme. And they're generally the things that get me into they're the things that get me into trouble, me meeting my own standards rather than me meeting other people's standards. So I'm interested to hear from other upholders if they find the same.
My biggest issue with other tendencies is basically rebels resisting reasonable requests. that drives me bonkers. I just I cannot cope. Like when you watch, do you watch that show Cops where they pull people no. over all the like, oh my God, it's so good. There's an Australian show where it just shows policemen going around and pulling people over yeah. and they constantly pull over those people who modify their cars illegally. And then every 6 months they'll get pulled over and they get canaries that they call them canaries. They're like yellow slips that basically say you need to unmodify this car or you can't drive it. And these people just pay like $1,000 every couple of months in fines because they're not supposed to have these cars. And it's just fascinating. And they get so angry. They get pulled over and the cop will say, you know, this is the third canary you've gotten in the last year. And they'll be like, oh yeah, but you know, I rode around for a couple of months and then, you know, I just modified it a little bit and it's totally regulation. And the cops are like, well, it's not regulation. I just told you it's not. Here's your yellow slip, your defect notice. And they're like, oh, and they get so annoyed. And it's like, you were warned three times to not do that. And now you're yelling at this cop and there's reasons why you're not supposed to do that. And I just shake my head and I physically cannot understand that kind of behavior. I don't get it.
I don't either. I do find rebels a little bit hard to deal with, but I definitely find questioners the most infuriating, I guess, because I'm overly exposed to questioners. So yeah, they really get on my nerves. Sorry, questioners.
Yes.
I'm a bit sensitive to you guys.
The next question we have is, so think of a habit you'd like to cultivate. So exercise, stay current with expense reports, daily prayer, that kind of thing. Take into account your tendency. What steps can you take to help yourself form that habit?
Oh, well, I think this is a hard question to ask upholders because if I want to form a habit, I'm just going to do it. Yeah, I don't have a good answer for that question. Because it would just make people want to punch me in the face.
I know I just, you know, roasted rebels hard just then, but I have a rebel friend and she's just the coolest, most relaxed, most chilled person I've ever met. And she just kind of gets stuff done. And if it gets done, it's fine. And if it doesn't, that's fine too. And things just kind of work out. And I would really like to be more like her and less scheduled. I'd like to be able to take time off. I'd like to be able to just do, like, she once drove to the coast on a whim on a Friday afternoon and stayed there for a week and hadn't packed anything, including shoes.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. Just drove to the coast and I just couldn't believe it. I was just, to have that kind of freedom and nonchalance is something I really crave and I would quite like. If any of you rebels out there could bottle some of that carefreeness and send it my way, that would be ace.
Yeah, I have to agree. And so this is kind of answering another of the questions, which is would you prefer to be in a different tendency? If so, can you take measures to help you simply emulate that tendency? And I have to admit that I quite like being an upholder, but I do, like you, find rebels fascinating and do aspire to that a bit because it does get a bit wearisome always being the one that people can count on and always holding yourself to high standards and meeting them. And I know that also sounds like something that people might want to punch me and go, yeah, that sounds really terrible, Kelly. But sometimes there's this great freedom in being a rebel that I just kind of look at and go, how amazing to have to yeah. resist expectations to such a degree that nobody expects anything of you. And you expect nothing of yourself.
But I also feel like in my life, the people that I have casually diagnosed as rebels seem to be strange golden children that are kind of protected. I feel like rebels have sort of like this magical aura about them where they don't have to care because the consequences yeah, don't seem to harm them.
That's what I'm talking about. Like things don't seem to touch them because –
yeah, the rules don't seem to apply.
Yeah, so I definitely look at that and go, because then it means kind of the sky's the limit, because like rebels achieve quite big things because it's almost like they're left, once they're freed of the burden of expectations, they're kind of left to do what most engages them and what they most want. And
yeah,
so
my brother-in-law is a hard rebel, and he's blessed by some kind of strange gods. Like he got the date wrong on a flight home from Japan once and missed his flight, arrived the day after the flight left. And for some reason, they apologized profusely to him and then put him on the next available flight in first class on the way home. And he didn't have to pay for it, and he had missed his flight because he was just sucking at life.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I just kind of feel like that's just a rebel thing. It's like you guys are just blessed by the universe.
God, yeah. So this is why, so I do have a secret kind of craving to be a rebel for those reasons. Yeah. You guys do seem to be able to, there's just something about you that, So last couple of questions. Does your tendency make your life easier or harder at work, with family and with friends? Carls?
Certainly easier. Being an upholder, I rarely, if ever, let people down. I'm pretty easy to work with because I get shit done. I don't miss deadlines. I think in terms of family and friends, upholder relationships can be a bit harder for me and for the people I'm friends with. So I'm often left waiting for rebels because they're running late, or I'm left to organize things because obligers are waiting for my cue. I get frustrated at questioners because they don't make decisions fast enough for me. Again, it's not a problem for them. That's my problem. So being more aware of that kind of standard that I hold myself to and other people is good, so that I don't get really angry when people are not, you know, being on time and, you know, fully engaged in life and doing all the things. I don't know if this is a typical upholder thing, but I'm not very good at comforting people when they're sad. Like I'm really great at distraction. If you need someone to get drunk with, or you need me to overhaul your cupboard or whatever, I'm your gal. But if you're going to come and emote at me, you need to go to someone else.
So, you know, I would say that that's because you're a thinker on the Myers-Briggs, and I'm a
feeler. Oh, see, there you go. Different personality test.
Yeah, so we're crossover episode now on Myers-Briggs. But yeah, does my tendency make my life easier? It definitely makes life easier at work, but certainly with family and friends, yeah, my rigidity and lack of – I think upholders just really struggle to because we've read the book, we get why other people can and can't do things, but there's still a secret part of my brain that's like, come on, like, just do the thing, you know? Like, why do you need accountability? Why do you need to do the research? Why do you need me to ask you to do this in a roundabout way and give you several choices so that you feel you've got agency over what you're doing? Like, just do the thing. So, yeah, I think we can be quite painful to
be absolutely
around. And I am quite aware of that. So I do try to quieten down the upholder a bit.
I wake up some mornings and go, try not to be a dick today.
Yes, I do the same.
Or tell anyone else they're being a dick.
Okay, finally, what is your favorite aspect of your tendency and what is your least favorite?
I get shit done, which I like. My least favorite is that I'm quite rigid and I'm still on the path to understanding that as a self-starter, I'm actually unusual. Most people aren't. So you can kind of the book I found was quite skewed towards upholders because Gretchen is an upholder. And it's not – and I've said this before, and it's actually in our book where you can kind of look at the tendencies and think that upholder is the best one, and it's not the best one at all, and like not by a long shot. I actually think obligers are beautiful. Like, what wonderful people!
I think obligers make the world go round. Like, I know they I know they feel frustrated at themselves a lot of the time, but they're really like the ones that make the world work. If the world did not have obligers, it would be a very dysfunctional place.
Absolutely. And I mean, like rebels are so chilled. I actually think that rebels probably live longer than anyone else because they don't have all the stresses that come from, you know, being, an upholder or a questioner. And questioners are great. I read the questioner section and thought the questioners is probably the best one because they have a good mix of all the different tendencies, and they piss other people off, but no one really pisses them off.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Which is a perfect, beautiful bubble to be in.
And I guess like the thing I like about questioners is that they don't do things without thinking about it. So like I will unquestioningly, like like, okay, so what's my favorite aspect of my tendency? The fact that I hold myself to high standards and expectations and I meet those expectations. What's my least favorite thing about my tendency? The fact that I hold myself to high expectations and meet those expectations. Because a lot of the expectations I hold myself to are completely unreasonable and often unachievable, and no self-respecting questioner would ever subject themselves to unreasonable expectations from themselves. So yeah, so, and I guess that's what the role that Ant plays in my life is that, you know, for the most part, he leaves me be because I am who I am. But every so often he steps in and goes, you know, I just don't know that that's reasonable. Or, you know, I've got another friend, my friend Bernadette, who definitely questioning, and she's definitely the one that pulls the reins on me quite often and goes, look, Kelly, I just don't know that what the standard that you've set for yourself there, I just don't know that that's a reasonable standard to aspire to. And I kind of have to go, okay, yeah, I think you're right. So yeah, I agree with you. It sounds great to be an upholder, but I feel like, yeah, obligers burn out because they do too much stuff for other people and then they have this big obliger rebellion. But I do feel upholders, because they're trying to meet both internal and external expectations, are almost as prone, or if not more prone, yeah, to the big burnout kind of. And I feel like obligers are the ones who – oh, sorry – upholders are the ones who will push too far in order to justify pulling back, whereas I reckon obligers just end up chucking their hands up and going, stuff you all, and yeah, know, being rebel.
I look at obligers as the peacekeepers. I think they kind of keep the rest of the tendencies from killing each other.
Indeed. Okay. So, yeah, so that's our discussion for Gretchen's Four Tendencies book. So you can come and have a chat about it in the regular Straight and Curly group, or you can search for Straight and Curly Book Club on Facebook and come and have a chat in there as well. Lauren's got all the questions, all the discussion questions in there, and we would love to hear your thoughts on it. And speaking of books, Carls, we have a book.
We do have a book. It is about diet and lifestyle detoxes, just different things about, you know, cutting out different things in your life, you know, what sort of diets have worked for us, our thoughts on food and all that kind of stuff. And Kelly knows what
it's called. Yeah, I know. Yeah, so it's called A Real Life Approach to Diet and Lifestyle Detoxes, because that's our approach to things. Like, you know, we do a lot of research, and we don't do things unless they make sense, and we're willing to self-experiment on ourselves in a safe and responsible fashion. And this book kind of details some of our self-experiments with diets and the lifestyle detoxes. And you can find the book at straightandcurly.com/book. And yeah, you can get it from as little as $6.99 in PDF format right up to $27.50 for the paperback if you're in Australia. And yeah, it's a great way to support the show if you love what we do. We don't monetize the show in any other way at the moment. So if you want to get behind us and help us keep producing what we do here, the book is a great way to do it.
Thank you so much for listening to Straight and Curly. This week's show notes and links will be available at straightandcurly.com.
And if you have any questions or weird self-improvement hacks you want us to trial, you can tweet us at Kelly Exeter or at Smaggle, or you can email us at hello@straightandcurly.com.